Okay, so we're up to Perek Yud Beis and Sefer Shoftim. Short Perek, we'll do the whole Perek tonight. So the end of Perek Yud Aleph, we learned about the defeat of Ammon. Yiftach and his army defeats Ammon, the tragic vow that he makes that the first thing that comes out of his house, he's going to offer to Hashem. His daughter comes out. She's the first one to greet him, and we learned about different approaches as to what exactly was the consequence. Either, according to Chazal, he actually killed her, but according to the Pashup Shad and the Mefarshim, he didn't kill her, he just stuck her, you know, in solitary confinement somewhere. And she was never allowed to have children and to build a family. Whatever it was not good. And that's really what leads us to the beginning of Perek Yud Beis. And Perek Yud Beis is a very interesting opening. Vayitzaek ish Ephraim. So again, Vayitzaek here, as we've seen several times throughout Sefer Shoftim, does not mean that they yelled or they screamed, but it means and they gathered. Right? The art school translates it, they were mustered. Excuse me. A little cold. So it means they gather. Now, they used to gather people by, announcing loudly, screaming out that people should come, so that's probably where it comes from.
What does mustard mean?
It means they came together. Like the troops were mustered. Exactly. Yeah. They were gathered together. Okay. So the people from Ephraim all gathered together here. Vayavor Tzafona. And they crossed over to the north. Rashi explains that they crossed the Yarden, because keep in mind, Yiftach was Yiftach HaGiladi. Gilad was in the area that was Aver HaYarden. It was east of the Jordan River. Gilad was part of the Shevet Menashe that settled east of the Jordan River, which will be important in this perek. And Ephraim, of course, settled in Eretz Yisrael. So they, in order to confront Yiftach, they had to cross the Yarden, right, from Eretz Yisrael into Eiver HaYarden, and travel north to get to Gilad.
Gilad was from
Menashe. The half of Menashe that settled in Eiver HaYarden. Exactly.
He was on the other side.
Exactly. Vayomru Yiftach, and they confronted Yiftach, and they said to him, Madua avarta lehilachem b'vnei Ammon. Why did you go and fight against b'nei Ammon? V'lanu lo karasa, lelechas imach. And you didn't call us to come and accompany you and fight with you. Beischa nisro falecha ba'esh. We're going to burn down your house with you in it. Right? So this is a very serious accusation. You know, at face value, it seems like, what's the big deal?
Right?
Well, what's the big deal? You know, okay, so he didn't call them. All right, you know.
Why would they gather so many people instead of just sending a message to find out?
Just send a message, and also what's the big grievance here, right? They're so insulted that Yiftach didn't summon them. You know what's going on?
What about the other nine spotted? Why weren't they? Could have been
exactly right. He didn't summon any of them.
Could it be because they were brothers? Ephraim and
Asher. Okay, good. It's good. So we'll see a little bit about that. Now, Yiftach, we'll see, does not try to appease them.
He didn't call them at all.
I'm sorry?
He didn't ask anybody from Ephraim to help him.
No.
He went
just with his own men.
Right.
Right? With the people of Gilad. And that's how he defeated them.
Was Ammon,
exactly, exactly. It seems that way. Yeah.
So why is
It could be that Gilad was the worst because they were in Eiver HaYarden. Right. But I think that they did get into the rest of Eretz Yisrael, but probably they bore the brunt of it, for the 18 years.
They didn't like him to be, maybe they wanted to be a leader anymore.
Oh? Okay, good. So let's see. Good. So there's different interpretations here. We're going to first work with the Mefarshim, and then at the end we'll talk about some of the, there is a Medrash here that sheds a little bit of light, a little bit of a different light, on this story, and the Ralbag says that that the, you know, well, actually, let's start with the Malbim. The Malbim says that what were they so upset about? They weren't just upset that he went to battle without them. That would not have been such a terrible thing. What were they upset about? They were really upset that he was appointed as the Rosh. Because if you remember, this was part of the negotiations with Yiftach in the beginning, right when his brothers came to him and said, hey, will you lead us? And he said, well, I don't know, you know, you're just coming to me now. Remember that whole story? And in the end, they appointed him as the leader. And that's really what they were upset about. Right? Because he was victorious in battle, they appointed him as the leader, as the Rosh. And the Malbim explains that Shevet Ephraim was very upset about this. Why? Because Shevet Ephraim says, one second, of the two Shvatim here, Ephraim and Menashe, which is greater?
Ephraim.
How do we know? Well, Menashe was the Bechor.
No, from the Brachos.
The Brachos. Yaakov, right? Yaakov switched his hands, and he blessed the two of them, and he gave Ephraim the primacy over Menashe. That means of the two brothers, Ephraim was destined to be greater than Menashe. So now Ephraim looks at what's happening, and they see that, you know, well, there was an issue here with Ammon. This fellow Yiftach, who was from Gilad, who was from Menashe, you know, won the battle. He was appointed as the general, he won the battle. And all of a sudden, he becomes the chief. Now, they took it as he wasn't just the chief of Gilad. He wasn't just the governor of Gilad. He was the head of all of Bnei Yosef. Because keep in mind, they were brothers. So even though it's true that Ephraim and Menashe had different halakim in Eretz Yisrael, but they still viewed each other as kind of one, you know, they were related. They're mishpacha, you know, they're cousins. This was like one group. So here they see Yiftach, and Yiftach's taking the mantle of leadership because of this victory over Ammon, and they say, what a chutzpah. We're the ones who are supposed to be in charge, not this guy, not Menashe. And that's really why they were upset. So it was really almost like their kavod, right? That he was stepping on their toes, that you think you're the leader, okay, it's nice that you won the battle, but, you know, we could have won the battle also, which is essentially what they're saying. You're not all that great because you won the battle. We could have also won the battle had you called us, right? So what makes you fit to be the king? We're supposed to be the kings. We're supposed to be the Rosh. We're supposed to be the ones in charge.
Why should you be the Rosh?
But again, because Yaakov gave the bracha to Ephraim. Some of the Mefarshim say also that if you look in the Torah, how they traveled in the Midbar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appointed Ephraim to go first. Right? So Ephraim is the Sheva that's supposed to be the Rosh, not Menashe.
Does it say basically that he became the Rosh? They considered him Rosh over Ephraim too.
So it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that explicitly, but it seems that, you know, from their objection...
Explicitly it says Amon only.
Well, I'm saying the Rosh?
No,
Gilad?
Gilad, yeah. People from Gilad came over to him and said, we'll appoint you Rosh.
Right.
So it doesn't show anything more in Shevet Menashe either, really.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
And also Shevet Menashe is split Shevet. So just because he's Rosh Shevet Ariadne, it doesn't mean he's Rosh on the other side.
Right. I hear what you're saying. It seems that that's how they took it, though.
I mean, he would have had to try to show his power over them for them to take that.
Somehow, right.
And it doesn't mention it any place that he did.
Right. If you look back in Perek Yud Aleph and Pasuk Tes, Ches, I'm sorry, it says, V'hayisalanu l'rosh l'chol yosh v'gilad. Right?
Just Gilad. That's what I'm saying. Doesn't anyone state that he was...
Lachem LaRosh, the next pasuk says.
Especially over the other half of Menashe.
yeah.
I'm sure Menashe had two Rosh Shvatim.
I hear what you're saying. You know, again, it seems to be that Ephraim is almost like set.
It's covered almost that they were upset that he led a battle.
You're stepping on our toes. right? Meaning, and you don't even deserve to have a Rosh. That's what it sounds like. I mean, even if he is a Rosh just over Gilad. Gilad doesn't even deserve to have a Rosh.
Sounds like pure jealousy to me.
Yep.
No, he didn't say Rosh of everybody.
Did we say everybody?
He accepted it, but then also assuming he accepted, it doesn't make that sense. He accepted this job of becoming the Rosh, but if he becomes the Rosh of everybody, and he defeats Amnon, and I'm going to
How could you say that? The people of Gilead came up with it. The Pusik specifically says the people of Gilead.
But I think it was a assumption that he would win. Yeah. He would then become the Rosh of everybody. He didn't want to do it otherwise.
I don't know. But anyway, that's how the Malbim understands their objection. And the Ralbag says what was even worse here is that not just that their claim was really unfounded, which is what Gilad is about to explain to them, but also this is real kafui tov. They should have been makir tov, right? They should have had a tremendous amount of gratitude to Yiftach that he just put his life on the line, which he's about to say, and he went to fight with Amon. He could have easily lost his life. Anyway, he put his life on the line, went to fight with Amon. They should have had a karas hatov to him that he did that, instead of now coming with some sort of a claim against him that he did something wrong. You know, so it's even a bigger chutzpah. Now, what's interesting is his response. If you remember, it's interesting. You know, I forgot about this, but if you look, but the Ralbag mentions it, and some of the other mefarshim mention it. If you look back at the beginning of Perek Ches, back in the days of Gidon. So Gidon, in Perek Zion, you know, wins his battle. And then, at the very beginning of Perek Ches, look what happens. Vayomru Elov Ish Ephraim. The people of Ephraim come to Gidon, and what do they tell him? What'd you do to us? Levilti Kiros Lanu. You didn't call us. You fought against Midyan, you didn't call us. Same exact thing. Right? That they said to Gidon. V'yirivun ito b'chazka. And they fought with him. They argued with him vehemently. Now what was his response? V'yomar aleihem, me'asisi atakachem. He says, nah, I didn't do anything that compares to you. Halo tov olulos Ephraim b'sir aviezer. You guys are so much greater than us. Right? Even the weakest among you is greater than us. You know, he made them feel good. You know? He made them feel good. You guys are going to capture the generals, Orev and Ze'ev. I can't do what you guys can do. So what happens? What's their response? Okay, yeah, you know, that's right. We are much better than you. They calm down. So that was Gidon's approach. Right? Ephraim comes to him with the same sort of claim, all upset you didn't call us. And Gidon calms them down, he pats their ego, he says, don't worry, you guys are really great, and you know, I didn't really do anything. What's Yiftach's approach? Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Yiftach Aleihem. Yiftach says to them, Ish Riv Hayisi. He says, I'm a fighter. Right? I'm a fighter. Aniva Ami. Uvne Amon Ma'od. He says, well, you know, I fought. Me and my men, we fought with Amon. We fought, you know, a tremendous amount with them. Ezak Eschem. V'lo Shatem Osim Yodi. And he says, not only that, but I did call you. I did call you, and you never came. Right? Meaning, throughout all these years, it sounds like. Okay, it sounds like he's discussing the history here, right? But he says, you know, over time, this happened. They were oppressing us for 18 years, and we did reach out to you, because again, they were bearing the brunt of Amon's persecution. We reached out to Ephraim. You guys didn't show. You guys didn't show out. Just didn't show up. The Mitzudas David says that maybe back when he was still in the land of Tov, if you remember, that's where he came from, this place called Tov. Maybe back when he was still there, he had reached out to Ephraim, and they didn't respond. Because the Pesukim don't record when this was. They don't record, you know, when he reached out to them and they didn't respond. But he's saying this really happened. And the Malbim says he comes back to them with three claims. Number one, he says that, you know, Ish Riv Hayisi Aniva Ami Uvnei Amon Ma'od. He says this was really our fight. Because even though Amon may have been persecuting, you know, all of Bnei Yisrael, but we bore the brunt of this. They were really, you know, on our backs because we were in Aver Hayardi. So this is not even really your fight. You guys at Eretz Yisrael, you didn't have it that bad. We had it much worse. So number one, this is really our fight, not your fight. That's number one. That's Aleph. Number two, Vo'ezak eschem lo shatem osim yodo. Number two, I did call out to you throughout the 18 years, right? And you never came to help, right? So all of a sudden, the last battle, you want me to call you? right? 18 years I've been calling you. Nobody's come. Right? You always got, you guys always, you know, hang up the phone on me. And now you want me to call you the last battle? You want me to call you to come? Pasuk Gimel. Vo'ere ki ein chamoshia. So says Yiftach, I have seen all these years that you're not coming to help us, you're not coming to save us. V'asim nafshi b'chapi. So I gotta take my own life into my hands. Va'ebrael b'nei Amon, I crossed over to b'nei Amon. Va'yitnei Hashem b'yadi, and Hashem gave them to me in my hands. V'loma alisem elai hayom azel hilachem. What are you coming to me now with a tina? What are you coming to me with a clay? Get out of here, right? That's Yiftach's response to them. And the Malbim says that this is the third. The third tina is that I saw that this was not meant to be. It wasn't meant to be that you were going to help me defeat them, because if that was the case, it would have happened long ago. Right? You could have done this long ago. Instead, it only happened because I put myself in danger. Right? That's the asima nafshi b'chapi. I took my life in my hands. I put myself in danger. Hashem helped me with his hashkacha. Special divine providence. Hashem helped me defeat them. Right? And you guys, you know, you're not in the picture here. You're not in the picture. So number one, it's our fight, not your fight. Number two, I called you in the past and you never came. And number three, this was divinely orchestrated. Because if you were supposed to be involved, it would have happened a long time ago. It only happened when I put my neck on the line, and then the Hashgacha Pratis kicked in and saved us. So you guys really have no claim.
Rabbi, why was their approach to Yiftach much more severe than to Gideon? They didn't tell him they're going to burn his house down. Gideon.
Yeah.
They were upset. Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's interesting. It could be because of this leadership piece. In other words, because of that piece where Yiftach negotiated before he even went to battle, he negotiated this position of leadership, that maybe really be what tipped them off. You know, what tipped the scale, and they said, okay, we can't do this. But again, it wasn't really justified. The Mitzudas David points out here, he says, Pashup Shat, you know, after so many years of you ignoring me, I just gave up. I gave up, and that's why I didn't come to you, you know, for this last battle. And he says that, you know, he says the mashal is that the asima nafshi b'chapi, just like you're holding something in your hand, you know, a lot of times we're holding things, we drop them. You know, my life could have easily been lost. My life could have easily been lost and taken. And it wasn't. And says the Mitzudas David, had I lost, then you could come to me with a taina. Then you come to me with a claim, you know, Yiftach, you botched it. Had you called us, we would have come in, we would have helped you out, you would have won. But I won. So what's your taina? What's your claim? You know, had I lost, you could have come to me, but I won. So what do you come? You have no claim here. You're not saying anything. So Yiftach pushes back against them. Now Yiftach is not just gonna respond with his words, but he's gonna take action. Vayikbots Yiftach es kol anshei Gilad. So Yiftach gathers up his men, the men of Gilad, and vayilochem es Ephraim, and he starts fighting. He starts attacking the Shevet Ephraim that had come. Vayaku anshei Gilad es Ephraim, and the people of Gilad start really beating the Bnei Ephraim. Ki amru pelite Ephraim atem Gilad besoch Ephraim besoch Menashe. And here it's interesting. The Mefarshim, you know, struggle how to understand this last phrase here. Ki amru, because they said, it sounds like Ephraim used to say this. Pelite Ephraim, atem Gilad besoch Ephraim besoch Menashe. What does that mean? So Rashi understands that, you know, that even the lowly people of Ephraim, you know, the Shrach people, you know, not the highest citizens in Shevet Ephraim, they would ridicule the Bnei Gilad. And they would say, Gilad is nothing. Right? Gilad is nothing. Atem Gilad besoch Ephraim besoch Menashe, you're nothing. You're even worse than us. Right? We're the lowest of Ephraim, you're even worse than us. You're nothing. Right? In the context of Ephraim, in the context of Menashe, you're worthless. You're good for nothing. The Radak understands the Pelite Ephraim. He says that you're like the remnants among us. You're insignificant, right? And again, you have this ridicule that the people of Ephraim are saying to the Bnei Gilad. And this is also because it's almost, you know, it's almost shocking. You know, why did Yiftach all of a sudden turn to violence? Just push them away. Just say get out of here and let them leave. It doesn't say that Ephraim attacked first. It sounds like Yiftach attacked first, right? So why is he attacking them? So the Metzudas David says the reason why he's attacking them was because of the ridicule. Because it wasn't just that they came with a time that, hey, you should have called us, you know, and you didn't call us. And you have no business being the king. They also ridiculed them. And they said,
They threatened them, correct?
We're going to burn down your house. But they also ridiculed them and said, you guys are nothings. You're insignificant. Right? You're lower than the lowest of Ephraim. You have no place in our Shevet. Okay?
Yeah, but it seems like Ephraim won an army with them when they went.
Well, they did, right? Vayitzoik, Ish Ephraim, yeah.
If you're bringing an army into your country and say,
they're feeling threatened. They're feeling threatened. Yeah. Correct. Right. That's definitely also part of it, 100%. Right. Definitely also part of it. Now, it's interesting. The Malvin points out here that that Gilad was chosen as the Shofet, really, right? Gilad was the Shofet, okay, following this victory. Now, again, you know, who's the Ikar here? Ephraim is supposed to be the Ikar. Now, Ephraim is saying that not only are you part of Menashe, which is supposed to be subservient to Ephraim, but you're also from the Polite. You're from the remnants of Menashe. You're the guys who settled B'nai V'Hayarde, right? So the B'nai Ephraim are saying that not only are you from Menashe, which is the lower of the two halves of Shevet of B'nai Yosef, right? But you're on the lower half of Menashe, because you settled the neighbor Hayarde. Because really, Klal Yisrael is supposed to be an Eretz Yisrael. So here they're ridiculing them. Not only, number one, you're part of Menashe. Number two, you settled the neighbor Hayarde. So you got a double whammy against you. Right? Atar to L'Reyusa. You have two strikes against you. And they're ridiculing them. And they're saying that you guys are insignificant. And you have no right to choose the Shofet from your people. Right? You have no business, you know, choosing the Shofet. And this is going to be the Shofet. Now, what is this? Okay? And that's what they're ridiculing, and that's why Yiftach and Gilad comes to them and really just fights back. The some say that the Plite here, the insignificant ones, were also because of the shepherds. That maybe they were shepherds. The shepherds of Gilad perhaps had to cross the Yarden to graze their animals. Maybe they were the low lives and they were the platin. That's what the Radak says in one suggestion. But also, you know, one interesting thing the Radak mentions here, because we're going to see in a minute, that this civil war caused a great deal of a great loss of life. And Ephraim is going to lose 42,000 men in this battle. Now this is a serious business. This is not just a couple hundred people, right? 42,000 men. So the Radak says that there must be something else going on here, you know, behind the scenes. He doesn't say what. But he said there's got to be something else that was going on in Shevet Ephraim that Hashem had to punish them for. Because he says it doesn't make sense that 42,000 men would be lost over, even if you want to say it was Gaiva, right? And you want to say here the fight was over the Gaiva of Ephraim versus the stubbornness of Yiftach saying, you know, you should have been Makir Tov to me. You know, even if you want to say this was a fight of Midos for 42,000 men, Radak says there must have been some other sin that was going on in Shevet Ephraim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to cleanse, you know, Shevet Ephraim. He did it through this method. But there must have been something else going on behind the scenes.
But isn't the fact that all the Shoftim that we had, where God really chose them,
right?
Essentially.
Right.
That's what we said at the origin.
Right.
So here God chose Gilad, essentially. He became the Shofet, and then they're rebelling against him. They want to kill him. So maybe that's the sin.
You're saying just the fact that they're rebelling against the Shofet.
Yeah, but the people didn't know God chose them at the time. We're just saying that the thing. But the people themselves didn't.
There was no communal nevuah. Right. I hear you.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
The Maim Loa says that because Yiftach sacrifices.
Oh, we're going to come to that. Good. We're going to come to that. Yeah. Okay. So let's see Pasuk Hey. And this is something that sticks out. You know, Hey and Vav. These psukim stick out. I still remember from learning Shoftim. You know, certain things like stick out in your mind. This is like one of those incidents that just sticks in your mind. Vayil called Gilad as Mabros Hayardein Le'Ephraim. So Gilad, as part of this battle, and presumably people start the B'nai Ephraim start fleeing, you know, once the B'nai Gilad start attacking them. So Gilad, they're smart, and they go and capture the crossings, right? They go back in over the yard, they back into Eretz Yisrael because they want to catch the Bnei Ephraim before they can flee, before they can go back home.
The bridges.
So they capture the bridges, and they position guards at the bridges, and now people are coming to cross the bridges. So they now want to figure out who's the Bnei Ephraim, right? The Bnei Ephraim are now on the retreat, so they go and they're trying to get home. So people come and everybody wants to cross the bridge. So they got to check the papers. Okay? So people say, you know, please let me cross the bridge. Are you Ephrasi? The Mefarshim say Ephrasi here means, are you from Bnei Ephraim? And of course they deny it because they don't want to get killed. Right? So they're denying it. Right? The Mitzvah, the Radak points out that Ephrasi can mean one of two things in Tanakh. It can either mean you're from the Bnei Ephraim, or it can mean that you're from Beis Lechem, Ephrat and Beit Lechem, right, which are right next to each other, even today. Right, Ephrat and Beit Lechem are right next to each other. So it can mean Ephrat, and Ephrat is mentioned in the Torah. Right, that's where Rachel is buried. Right, Biderech Ephrasa, he Beis Lechem, she's buried in Beit Lechem, which is right on the road to Ephrat. So he's, Ephrat, it can mean one of two things. It can either mean you're from Ephrat, Beit Lechem, or it can mean that you're from the Bnei Ephraim. Okay, so and it's interesting. It says the Plite Ephraim. Again, the Plite implies like the refugees, like the remnants, the ones that were left over. So Mitzudas David says either the Chashuvim they knew, you know, everybody knows who the head honchos are, right? The Israeli army knows who the lead terrorists. Everybody knows who the lead terrorists are, you know. They don't know all the henchmen. Right, so the Plite Ephraim were the ones that they had to verify, but everybody else they knew who they were. He says also it could mean the Plite, just like the left, the ones who hadn't been killed yet, because a lot of people were already killed. So what? How did they test them? Pasuk Vav, Vayomru lo emorna shibolas. So they tested them. Say the word shibolas, right? Say the word shibolas. Now we know shibolas to mean a stalk, like a stalk of wheat. Right, but shiboles in the context of a river can also mean like the flow of the river. Okay, so that's really the context here meant the flow of the river. Say the word shiboles. Vayomer siboles. So the people, the Bnei Ephraim, weren't able to say a shin. Right, and the Radak points out, he says, you know, sometimes different people in different parts of the world can't pronounce certain letters. Right, he quotes, he says people from France, you know, can't say shin. I don't know, I guess in his day, people from France couldn't say shin. I don't know if they can anymore. But, right? I'm sorry? I don't know. Can Frenchmen say the sh? I don't know. But, so he says that, you know, that they couldn't pronounce the shin. They couldn't pronounce it. So they said sibolas. It said sibolas. That's how they pronounced it. Velo yachim daberke. And they weren't able to speak properly. They just weren't able. They didn't have the capability of saying shibolas in the proper way. Vayochzu also. So as soon as they heard the word sibolas come out of the guy's mouth, what did they do? They grabbed him, vayishchatu, and they killed him, because they knew that he was from Bnei Ephraim. Right? El Mabros Hayarnin, vayipol ba'esahi, Bnei Ephraim, arboim u'shnai melef. Right? And you have 42,000 men being killed between the previous battles and the people that were captured at the crossings. You had 42,000 people that were killed. Okay. Now, Aaron mentioned before the Yalko Me'am Loes. So the Me'am Loes does quote the Tana Devei Elio, who says that there was something else going on here behind the scenes as well. It wasn't just that they stepped on their toes. It wasn't just that Yiftach took the leadership. Bnei Ephraim also were furious about what happened with Yiftach's daughter. They heard what happened with Yiftach's daughter. And again, you could probably understand this either way, whether he killed her or whether he, you know, confines her to solitude for the rest of her life, which is also a terrible thing, right? But either way, you could probably understand this. But certainly, according to the Midrashim, he killed her. Right? According to the Midrashim, we learned last week, he killed her. So they were furious. And they said, why did you have to do that? You know, why did you take this neder that the first thing that comes out of your house, you're gonna offer to Hashem, which ended up in you taking the life of your daughter? You only did that because you didn't have enough troops. He obviously wasn't confident going into battle, and that's why he had to take a neder to promise to Hashem, Hashem, please help me out, and if you do, I'm gonna give you the offering, the first thing that comes out of my house, right? Say to Bnei Ephraim, if you just did a little more hishtadlus, right? If you just took a few more troops, you could have called us, we would have come join you. You wouldn't have had to take the neder. You wouldn't have ended up killing your daughter. You could have prevented this entire travesty. Right? So the Bnei Ephraim were furious about that. Not just about, you know, the fact that, you know, it puts a whole new spin on it. It's not just their arrogance that you know, that he was stepping on their toes and he was taking the leadership when he wasn't entitled to it. No. They felt that something was done that was wrong. Right? He did something wrong. He made a mistake and it was a very public thing. And they felt it was a travesty in Klal Yisrael and they had to take a stand for it. And that's why the Bnei Ephraim came, according to the Tana Devei Eliyahu. Now, what's interesting here also is that Pinchas didn't react. Right? Remember Pinchas last time, we said Pinchas was involved. He was the Kohen at the time. He could have done Hataras Nedarim, and he didn't. And, you know, and we said last week, you know, that Yiftach didn't want to go to him because he felt, I'm the general. I'm the Shofet. I shouldn't have to go to the Kohen. And Pinchas said, I'm the Kohen. I shouldn't have to go to him. Right? I'm the Talmud Chacham. So they both held their ground. So last week we learned about Pinchas that he didn't step forward and do Ataras Nedarim when he should have. And here, according to the Medrash, he saw what was happening. He saw the Bnei Ephraim coming, and he knew that this was going to spiral out of control. And again, he should have stepped in. He should have stepped in and said, you know, listen, you know, you're not going to make the situation better. It is what it is. It happened. You know, unfortunately it happened, whatever the case is, but you're not going to make it better. You know, just go back home. And he didn't do that. And because of that, the Medrash says that he was punished. Just like we learned last week, he was punished. He lost his Ruach HaKodesh. This was also part of that punishment. Because here he also didn't step in. And he could have had a hand in preventing this civil war between Ephraim and and Gilad. Now it's fascinating because, you know, it's ironic in a sense. Because if you think about the story, the only story we have of Pinchas really in the Torah, he's the one who was a Kanoi. He was the one to take initiative. He was the one to step forward when no one else was doing it and say, something is happening here that's wrong and I need to stop it. And he stopped the Magefa. You know, that was Parshas, you know, what was it? It's really the end of Balak. At the end of Balak, right? He does it, and then Pinchas, at the beginning of Pinchas, he's rewarded, right? So it's ironic that here in the Torah, that was his role as the Kanoi, as the one to step in and to stop the travesty and to stop the Magefa and to prevent the terrible things from happening. And here, he's almost too passive. You know, he's making mistakes the other way. Right? Right. Could be, you know, listen, we didn't have the same co-op that he did.
Traveling so far.
Right. Right, right, right.
So why 42,000 men from Ephraim? How does that explain 42,000 men from Ephraim?
What, being killed?
Yeah.
Meaning if they were doing something right.
Yeah, if they were doing something
this doesn't explain that.
Right.
This measure does not explain that. You have to explain something else. Either that this was just Yiftach, he did it. You know, this was Yiftach's Bechira, and he decided to kill these 42,000 people. Or you have to say something like the Radak said earlier, there must have been some sort of hate in Shevet Ephraim that Hashem was, you know, was working things out that they would be punished. It's interesting, there's another Medrash, a Tanhuman Parshas B'chukosai, which kind of flips the whole story on its head and implies that the killing, that Yiftach killing his daughter was actually a punishment for what he did to the Bnei Ephraim. So not like we've been saying until now, that really this was a result, right? The Tana Devei Eliyahu is saying that the whole civil war with Ephraim was a result of him killing his daughter. The Tanhuma flips it on its head. And it says that really, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, it sounds like it's in the chronology, it's not going to work out. So you have to say Kadosh Baruch Hu knew, you know, what Yiftach was going to do, and because of that, he orchestrated that Yiftach would not do Ataras Nedarim, right? And would end up killing his daughter, and that was a punishment for what he was going to do to the Bnei Ephraim. But you see, either way, you see the Midrashim, however you understand it, whichever direction, you know, the cause and effect is going, but you see in the Midrashim that they link these two stories. These are not two independent stories, right? But these stories are really very dependent on each other, and they're linked, and this shows us, you know, the consequence of the decisions. Okay. That's pretty much the end of the story here. We actually, Pasuk Zion is really the end. Vayishpod Yiftach es Yisrael Sheishonim. So Yiftach proceeds to lead Klal Yisrael for 6 years. Vayamas Yiftach HaGiladi, and Yiftach dies. Vayikover Be'orei Gilad, and he's buried in the cities of Gilad. And all the Mefarshim discuss here why the cities of Gilad. We mentioned one thing last week, that part of Yiftach's punishment was that his limbs atrophied, right? That was his punishment for what he did to his daughter, that his limbs atrophied, and therefore every place he went, you know, another limb would die and would fall off, and they would bury it in wherever he was. So it ended up that parts of his body were buried all over Eretz Yisrael. Now that's one interpretation. The Radak says that's the Medrash. He says the Pashup Shat is that it just means he was buried in one of the cities. Right, that's the Pashup Shat, says the Radak. And the Rambag has an interesting interpretation, where the Rambag says, and this is fascinating, because how you can even do this api halacha, but the Rambag says that Yiftach didn't have any children. Right, we don't see from the Psukim that Yiftach had any children that survived him. So there was no real legacy to live on. You know, Yiftach was a great warrior, and he did an incredible, you know, he orchestrated an incredible victory over Amon, and he should be remembered. But he has no children to keep that legacy going. So therefore, after he died, it sounds like they actually took different bones of his body and buried them in different places so that there would be like a little, you know, a little kever of Yiftach in many different cities so that everybody would remember Yiftach and all that he did for Klal Yisrael. Which is a very interesting interpretation, but it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit shocking. You know, kids, how can you do that? You know, it's just a halacha, like it's bizoy ames. You know, how can you do that to a dead body? But that's what the Rabbah says. Okay. Now that's the end of the story of Yiftach. Now Pasuk Ches, and we'll just read through the last several psukim in the last couple minutes here. Vayishbot acharav es Yisrael, Ivtson mi beis lechem. And Ivtson from beis lechem is the shofet after Yiftach. Not much is said about Ivtson, except for the following two psukim, really. Pasuk Tes, vayhilo shloshim banim ushloshim banos. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters. Shilach hachutza. He had 30 sons. Ushloshim banos. Shilach hachutza. Ushloshim banos. Hevi levanov. So he had 30 sons and 30 daughters. The 30 daughters he married off to 30 men, and he took 30 daughters in law for his sons. Minachutz, right from outside his family. Vayishbot es Yisrael shevashanim, and he leads Klal Yisrael for 7 years, and then Vayamas Ivtson Vayikaver beBeis Lechem, he dies and is buried in Beis Lechem. That's where he was from. Now, Pashup Shat in the Pesukim, you read this, and it sounds like, okay, you know, some guy named Ivtson, a strange recording of, you know, his kids, and he had a lot of kids, and they got married, you know, kind of a strange pasuk that stuck in there, no other information. The Mefarshim point out here that they quote Chazal, the Gemara says that Ivtson was Boaz. Interestingly, the Rabbag says, how did Chazal see that? Where did Chazal see that Ivtson was Boaz? How did they get that? So he says, because we know Boaz was a shofet. Boaz was from Beis Lechem. And Ivtson is the only shofet that's listed in Sefer Shoftim that's from Beis Lechem. So says the Rabbag, Chazal figured out that Ivtson must have been Boaz. Must have been the same person. That's what the Rabbag says. That's how they knew. So Ivtson is Boaz. Now, why does it tell this whole story about his kids, that he had a lot of kids and they all got married? Radak gives two interpretations. Number one, he says, Pashup Shat, he says that, you know, it's a big schus to marry off kids, right? It's a big schus to marry off children. So the fact that he had so many children and he was zoche to marry off all 60 of his kids, right? The 30 sons and the 30 daughters, and he married them all off, was a tremendous schus, right? And the fact that he was a shofet was a schus. So Pashup Shat, says the Radak, the Pesukim are telling us what a great person Ivtson and Boaz, right, who's really Boaz, what a great person Boaz was, that he was Zoche, number one, to be the Shofet, and number two, to see all this Nachas that he was able to marry off, his 60 kids. Who would think? You know, I'm sorry? Rus was his wife. No. These kids were not with Rus. No, these kids were not with Rus. These kids were with other people. Yeah, correct.
After he died.
Yeah, he's an old man when Rus comes onto the scene.
Right, he was dead already.
Correct. Yep. But it's interesting, you see that even this concept of marrying off children is tied to Arz Chusin. You know, sometimes we think, they're like, oh, you know, you marry off kids, you know, so it's, you know, what's wrong with them? You know, it's they're not getting married. Sometimes, you know, we think about it that it's their issue. Of course it's their issue. But you see clearly from this, from what the Radak is saying here, that it's also partly, you know, it reflects on us, meaning our schus, and we have to work on ourselves also, and, you know, do things ourselves as a schus in order to see our kids married off. which is an interesting take from the Radak. Now, the other pshat the Radak says, which he says is more based on the Medrash, is that this is really something that's not so good. And it's contrasting to the next perek, which is going to talk about Manoach. Manoach is going to be the father of Shimshon, and we're going to learn about that. Right? So Manoach is in the next perek. So why the contrast? So he says, Chazal tell us that he did not invite Manoach to any of his chasanas. He made 60 weddings. He did not invite Manoach to any of the chasanas. Why? Because he says, Manoach, poor guy, he doesn't have any kids. He's never going to invite me to his chasanas. He's not making any chasanas. So I'm not going to invite him. Right? So because of that, he was punished. And the Radak says, based on the Chazal, that he was punished, and that all of these kids, even though they all got married in his lifetime, but they also all died in his lifetime. And he saw 60 kids die in his lifetime, and the only child that survived Boaz was the child from Rus, who was born after he already died. So he didn't even see his only living descendant. So that was a punishment for him, that he didn't have the sensitivity to Manoach to invite the guy, you know, just because he didn't have any kids. So who cares? Invite the guy, you know, to your chasanas. He didn't have that sensitivity. That's how he understands it. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, Pasuk Tes. Sorry, we did the Tes in Yud, Yud Aleph. Vayishpot acharav es Yisrael Elon hazvuloni. So this fellow, Elon hazvuloni, was the next shofet. Vayishpot es Yisrael eser shanim. He leads Klal Yisrael for 10 years. Vayomos Elon hazvuloni. Vayikaber ba'ayalon be'eretz zvulun. He was from Zvulun, that's where he was buried. We see nothing about Elon, right? You know, we don't see anything. There's nothing. Mefarshim say not a word here, not a peep about him. All we know is that he ruled for 10 years. That's all we know about him. Pasuk Yud Gimel Vayishpot Acharav Es Yisrael Avdon Ben Hillel HaPir Asuni Pir Asoni. I'm sorry. Vayhilo Arboim Bani Mushloshim Bnei Bani. He had 40 children, 30 grandchildren. Rochvim Al Shivim Ayarim, and these 30 and 40 rode on 70 donkeys. Vayishpot Es Yisrael Shmona Shanim, and he ruled over Klal Yisrael for 8 years. The Radak says here also must be telling us how great he was, that he had so many children, so many grandchildren, and they were very wealthy. He says that's why they were riding on donkeys. That was a sign of wealth, that they could ride on the donkeys. They didn't have to work for a living. You know, they had a lot of money. So he says he had so many children and grandchildren riding in donkeys. So he was he had a lot of chosim also.
Yeah.
But we had it. Yeah, I don't remember. We had it earlier.
So
we mentioned it. Yeah, I don't remember offhand. Pasuk Tes Vav Vayomos Avdon Ben Hillel Hapirasoni. He dies. Vayikaver bePirasoni beEretz Ephraim beHar Amaleki, and he's buried in Har Ephraim. Okay, so this is the end of Perek Yud Beis. And Amir Tzah Hashem, next week we'll pick up with Perek Yud Gimel, which is the story, the beginning of the story of Shimshon with his parents, his father Manoah.